There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast.
On the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Did you guys wake up today just so sad that you'll never kiss Stephen Hawking on his tiny lips?
Yeah, that was sad. That's what I thought. The one that got away.
Slowly, he's got a smile got like a Pomeranian. But he was so smart, Jenny. He's so smart.
He was. He was like the Norbert of scientists. Honestly, one of the... Tuna melts my heart, and Norbert, my two favorite dogs. I love Doug the Pug.
Yeah.
But come on.
But he managed to cheat on his wife using nothing but the weird nubbin that he must have had left, or just rubbing his knees against her vagina
honestly,
or something,
man,
in the wheelchair.
That is the greatest encouragement ever for a child to get into science. Get into the arts, get into science, and you can find love too. All right, welcome to the last podcast. On the left, I am Ben Kissel. I'm staring at Marcus Parks. Beautiful teeth.
Thank you.
And we got in mourning Henry Zebrowski. I know you're devastated.
I shaved my pubic hair in mourning just so that the top of my penis would be completely bald for God to see I hide nothing.
It's a strange tradition.
It is.
To
it's
show
Polish.
Your sadness.
Yes.
All right. All right. Well, speaking of, speaking of pubic hair, thank you. You're going to want it if you live in Alaska because it's cold. All right. We're going to talk. The story today takes place in Alaska. It's about this dude, Robert Hansen. John Cusack played him in the movie The Frozen Ground. He was too handsome for a role for the first time ever.
He does a very good understated job, and so does Nick Cage. Very understated to the point where it's like he wasn't even trying. And it's an hour and 45 minutes. And
so
it could be boiled down to a 17-minute film.
Yes. It's almost like they were just there to collect a paycheck.
All right. Let's set the scene here.
All right.
Anchorage, Alaska, June 13th, 1983.
Oh! There's a bald eagle evidently in the sky.
A young woman named Cindy Paulson, handcuffed and terrified, flags down a truck driving past a used car lot in the middle of the night. The girl tells the truck driver she just escaped from a pilot at Merrill Field who was in the process of forcing her to board his Piper Cub light aircraft. The pilot's plan had been to take her out into the wilderness, set her loose, and hunt her down like an animal. And she'd believed him because she'd seen his house. The basement was filled with hunting trophies, bearskin rugs, wolf hides, goat heads, and stuffed ducks. It was obvious this man knew how to hunt and knew how to kill.
I've been a detective for 30 years, and I'll tell you one thing. If I see a stuffed duck, I know they're guilty.
And it was obvious this man had done it to a woman before. Imagine the type of man who would do such a thing. Imagine what sort of monster a person would have to be to hunt down a woman in cold blood. Now imagine that guy is Elmer Fudd, and that's Robert Hansen.
Hey!
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting Wadies.
Oh, that's horrible, Elmer. That is a horrible thing for you to do. You used to hunt rabbits, and dare I say ducks. I actually blame, what was the name of the famous rabbit there?
Bugs Bunny? You forgot Bugs Bunny's name?
What is wrong with
you? Are you having a blood clot? Is it moving up? Is it going up your neck?
He would dress like a lady sometimes. Maybe that put the thought in Elmer's head.
So you're saying just because he dresses in women's clothes, it is an excuse for him to be hunted down by a man with a speech impediment?
Yeah, no.
So you never supported
Elmer Fudd. I always was on Team Bugs.
You're flip-flopping all over the place.
No. Flip-flopping.
You just blamed Looney Tunes for a serial killer.
Hey, man. What you put into your mind, you bring out. I don't know.
So Robert Hansen, a.k.a. the Butcher Baker, was an acne-scarred, wart-covered serial killer with a speech impediment and a weird dick who killed at least 17 women in Anchorage, Alaska from 1980 to 1983, mostly by rifle.
Now, one thing I will say immediately about Robert Hansen is that no one's really properly touched the story of this guy. I mean, right. There's been a movie, Frozen Ground. Mm. ID Channel has done several specials on Robert Hansen, which is kind of why we decided to start today's tone with some true crime voice that Marcus does so well.
Thank you.
Because you're born to do this. Unfortunately, this is how you will end your life, is working for the ID Channel. But then he brings the gun
to his temple. He looks into the mirror and says, "I think today's the day." A stuffed duck tells him to pull the trigger.
Carolina just knocking on the door. "Marcus, why are you narrating alone? I told you to stop. It ends in your suicide." But the truth is that I think this story's got a lot to do with, and the reason why it's covered by ID Channel and like the Oxygen Network specifically is because it's really great at scaring women, and it fits with the true crime world's fascination with killing sex workers. Mm. But no one ever actually tells the real story here, which is the story of a fucking incel gone wild.
Mm. Right.
Now, while most of our gun-toting serial killers tend to spend relatively little time choosing their weapons, Bob Hansen was a gun nerd, placing him among the most insufferable nerds we have to deal with here in America.
Oh, my God. You know, AR stands for Armalite. I just want to... Some people say it stands for assault rifle. It's Armalite. Sounds like a jelly spread.
Also, I always get scared of calling them gun nerds because we know that they are that. But they have the guns.
Yes.
Hansen's weapon of choice was a Ruger Mini 14 rifle, which to me kind of said, like, I watched a bunch of YouTube clips, like a bunch of YouTube reviews. It kind of seems like the hipster choice over an AR-15.
Okay.
Like, the cool kids, she's like, "Yo, you do an AR-15? I like the classic Mini 14. Here's an example of
Did you what? Why are you giggling?
To circle it in your gun and ammo magazine.
Is it to kill me and my family? Is it to take over the mall?
Why do you keep your gun and ammo magazine sort of pointing at your Playboy?
Well. Now, here is an example of one of today's gun nerds having a conversation with himself on YouTube about the Mini 14.
Welcome back to Gun and Shot TV, and today I was going to talk about the Ruger Mini 14. I'm not a huge AR fan, not that the AR is a bad system, it just for some reason visually didn't appeal to me.
Oh, God.
So I did want a gun that would shoot 223. Or 5.56, because that is the cheapest center fire rifle cartridge you're really going to get. So, after much looking around, I found a pretty good deal on a new in box, stainless, and wood, which is the color combo that I wanted, Ruger good. Mini 14.
Please put the gun down. Please put the gun down. And also, you're not on Gun and Shot TV. You're on the internet.
It's YouTube.
You're on YouTube.
Yeah. And now, if you excuse me, I have to have my super beats. Because Dana Loesch, she's a babe. She told me to have super beats.
Robert Hansen, described as dippy and crater-faced with overlapping front teeth and thick, horn-rimmed glasses, was described by even women who survived him as looking like a nerd straight out of Central Casting.
Yeah, I mean, you're sitting there and laughing because he comes up to you and he's like, "Hey, girls, hey," and it's true. He had his fucking, pants just under his nipples, shirt tucked in, fucking pockmark face, huge Coke bottle glasses, and you're like, "Get out of here, nerd." And then all of a sudden it's which seems to be the unifying, hardening sound of nerds everywhere.
Yeah.
Just that gun cocking back.
And a gun nerds we're specifically talking about, not people who go to Comic-Con, who we love, or crime cons.
Now, and speaking of that, you know, like, even Robert Hansen's modes of speech were nerdy, but not in like a smart nerdy or even like a reference-heavy nerdy kind of way. Hansen was what you would call a dull nerd, possibly the worst kind. Like, he'd use phrases like "gee whiz" and "my gosh" and "doggone it," even when he was talking about killing women.
It makes it worse.
Yeah.
It makes it worse because you can't talk. You can't talk like the Beave, right. And then all of a sudden you've got a chain. You have a specific chain loop in your ceiling that's built for hanging women up by. Like, there's something about it that's is his weird, dull, doll-like eyes, kind of like Gary Ridgway. I imagine when you're like looking at him trying to like plead for their life, and he's just like, "Why is my meat talking?" And like that kind of weird patina glowing over their face, where you just like, "Oh, now that dude is now gone." Whatever animals inside has taken over.
Now, although Hansen was known for his donuts back in the 70s and 80s, today Hansen is mostly known for his imitation of the Richard Connell short story The Most Dangerous Game, originally published as The Hounds of Zaroff and later adapted into The Pest, starring John Leguizamo.
What? Oh my God, it is the plot of The Pest.
What? Is that real?
Oh, one my God, stinky dinky, is. Absolutely.
No,
oh, that makes me so upset.
Does everything go back to The Pest? I am... Oh, God.
Now, in the original story, the titular General Zaroff, a deranged Russian aristocrat, uses a shipwrecked big game hunter named Sanger Rainsford as prey, turning the hunter into the hunted.
Oh, my.
Now, it's not known if Hansen ever read the story, although it's not really that likely because Hansen's IQ was somewhere in the Gary Ridgway dullard area.
Oh.
But he was very organized. And it also shows that the power of being very organized and what it can do for you, which is that if you never fail and you think about every single detail, that's how he covered his tracks, besides shoddy police work as normal. Right. But he covered his tracks pretty well because he was such a fucking insufferable nerd about every single fucking thing that he did. So that he kept lists and maps and he did checklists, all this bullshit.
But... either way, whether he read it or not, Hansen's eventual MO was eerily similar. See, this is how General Zaroff described the prey he hunted before Sanger Rainsford came along, as it was quoted in Manhunter by John Douglas.
I hunt the scum of the earth, sailors from tramp ships. A thoroughbred horse or hound is worth more than a score of them.
General Zargoff?
That's yeah, dude.
Zaroff, just Zaroff.
Did his son go on to be, what was it, Zangief?
Zangief? I'm pretty certain that Zangief's last name is Zaroff, so Zangief Zaroff, and this is canon. This is a part of the Street Fighter lore. This is a part of the extended universe.
Okay.
But also, the difference is that General Zaroff was fighting sailor men and not scared women. In the dark.
Mm-hmm. And for Hansen's part, he felt a lot much the same way about his victims, replacing sailors with topless dancers in a classic Madonna whore complex switcheroo. Now, women, to him, were either goddesses to be protected and cherished or filthy creatures that needed to be punished. And honestly, like in modern times, you know, we already mentioned it a little bit, like Robert Hansen, he wouldn't be out of place on some of the darker incel subreddits. You know, these
What's
guys.
What's an incel?
Involuntary celibacy is what they call themselves.
They and call themselves incel?
Yes. They proudly call themselves incels. They say they are involuntarily celibate, that they will never find a woman, they will never get laid, and of course none of it is their fault.
They're two gentlemen. They're too much like gentlemen,
like the supreme gentleman.
It's even gone further than that. Like
what?
they canonize Elliot Rodger. Like he is.
They
canonize him. He's like their hero. And these guys go even further than the whole like nice guy thing. The nice guy thing is a part of it, but these incel guys have taken it to the next step. Like they blame the rest of the world for not unconditionally accepting all of their numerous faults, and you know they want the world to just pretty much hand them a supermodel just because they exist, because they're men. And Robert Hansen these days would have been one of those guys.
I mean, I will say, yeah, there's a lot of costs that come in with dating a supermodel. I mean, first of all, you have to have several different outfits for just the different photo shoots that she's involved with casually. Like, you can't just wear the same shirt because then she doesn't get the same kind of money. And if you see an out, like, you have to, you're talking like doorbills at the Spaga, at the Viper Room. I don't even know if people even still go to these places.
I don't know.
I don't know if supermodels go to that.
Yeah, the Viper Room is probably just, it's probably just Nikki Six at this point. Bartending and being the number
wherever
one customer.
Wherever supermodels go, I am not a, we don't
I
know.
I don't know, we don't know.
No, of course
they
we don't
go
know.
Wherever they go, but I know there's a door cover and the supermodel doesn't have to pay it, but you as an incel will definitely have to pay it, probably twice. The guy's going to look you up and down and double charge you, so you have to understand you have to have some kind of steady job.
I don't think we've ever stumbled upon a subject that we know less about. The life of a supermodel. No clue.
Now, almost all of Hansen's victims were exotic dancers at strip clubs in Anchorage. Places like the Kit Kat Club, the Wild Cherry, and the Gentleman's Retreat. Not to mention the Great Alaskan Bush Company.
Which is why they outlawed Polish funerals in Alaska.
Wait, what's a Polish funeral?
Do you have to shave your pubes for my intro, where I had to shave my pubes in mourning, and then Kissel made a pubic hair joke.
I have to. So, yep, the Alaskan Bush Company. There's a dog. He'll never talk. I don't know. It's a bush beans joke. It's early. I don't know.
It's early.
It's 12:30 p.m.
Well, when you put the p.m. in there, then
well,
really...
not according to the 12 Bud Limes, then it's always early morning.
You always say, I've never drunk a Bud Lime in my life.
I know for a fucking fact that you have.
No, I don't think that I have.
I've seen you drink a Bud Lime on the road.
If it was free.
Yeah.
If it was free. That's a different story.
I think we were at a bar in D.C. and you drank a Bud Lime.
Well, I seem to remember being like, yeah, it's like you take the tropics with you. Like you were saying something like that at like five people that weren't listening.
What's new?
Now, Robert Hansen was so detached from these women as humans that in his confession, he nonchalantly referred to his serial killing as, quote, a summertime project.
Ugh, what a jackass.
Which shows how little he thought of it.
Yeah.
And also, again, about his extended game. To me, Robert Hansen is very similar to a Jerry Brudos, where actual a part of his pathology was having a family and kids and a career. Mm. That was like a part of his... what he'd get pleasure out of was seeing, like, look how I can hold all of this other shit together and also be a fucking maniacal supervillain on the other side, which is how most incels view their entire life.
Mm-hmm. And with that, let's get into the life of Robert Hansen. Robert Hansen was born February 15th, 1939, to a frail woman named Edna and a severe Danish man named Christian.
Oh.
Now, as
very Danish name. Very Danish.
Christian?
Is
yes.
it? No, it's not. It's,
yeah,
it's technically... No, a real Danish name is like Jörg by Harsk.
No, Hans Christian Andersen. He was an author.
Wow, and a Danish one at that.
And a Danish one.
Was he? Do you know that for
up.
Sure?
My mother was very into him. No, I don't
you
know.
You cheated and you looked this up before the podcast.
No,
so you could pretend to know something about Denmark.
No, I know a lot about Denmarks and a whole series of other kind of marks.
No, we all know. With serial killers, it's either the mother or the father who does the number, and in this case, it was most definitely the father. Robert Hansen was a constant disappointment to his dad, even as far down as to what hand Robert wrote with. As was the style at the time, Christian forced his son to write with his right hand instead of his dominant left, and this forced switch scrambled Robert's brain and saddled him with a debilitating stutter that he would carry for the rest of his life.
And it's interesting because there's a lot of people that were forced to do that. My mom was beaten pretty severely in Catholic school to switch from left to right, and it changed her whole life. I don't know if that's why we're all the way we are all like my family.
I don't think it goes down the line.
I don't think so.
Through.
I hope not. I mean, it could. I'm looking Maybe. For an explanation. I'm looking for somebody to tell me something because everyone I yell at has got no answers. But... for him, I think he was already on the way. And I feel like there's a lot of things. It's kind of like fucking, not to celebrate John Wayne Gacy's father, but he's x-rayed visioned into his son and saw something fucking weird about him. And he thought the way to do it was to beat and deride. And this is how I'll make him a strong human being. Where, and also there was a part of it where he, Christian, looked at Robert, was like,
you are disappointing me.
And he wanted to force him to be a tall, straight Danish man. And meanwhile, like, you have fucking Seymour from Little Shop of Horrors as your son.
Right.
And it drives you insane.
Yeah.
You know what I didn't like doing? left-handed layups.
Oh, left-handed layups are the worst.
The worst.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you there.
All right.
Yeah, and, you know, these guys, they were awful fathers, of course. Like yeah. Both. Like, we're definitely not saying that this was the right way to go about it. But
look at their sons. Look at their sons.
They did that. They did. Yeah, they did it the wrong way because with kids like this, you can fucking like.
I'm not celebrating them.
I mean, there wasn't a bunch of books.
You did use the word celebrate in the same sentence as John Wayne Gacy's father.
But he did say, I don't want to celebrate John Wayne Gacy's father. But then he did.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. He said, I don't want to celebrate John Wayne Gacy's father. But then he did.
Right. They were technically right. They just didn't realize it until afterwards. If they turned out to be people that invented headphones or they committed suicide at the age of 25, they would definitely be wrong.
Yeah.
Today's sponsor for Last Podcast on the Left is the new horror thriller Where Silence Means Survival, A Quiet Place, starring Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. Lee, Evelyn, and their two children have survived in a post-apocalyptic world by finding ways to keep quiet and avoid summoning vicious, sound-detecting predators. But how long can this family survive in a world where any sound they make could be their last? Now, I checked out the trailer, and this does look like a pretty solid post-apocalyptic thriller, which as far as like horror movie subgenres go, I gotta say post-apocalyptic thrillers are among my favorites. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to be going seeing this movie in the theaters when it comes out. And when does it come out, you may ask? A Quiet Place will be in theaters April 6th. That's A Quiet Place, starring John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, in theaters April 6th.
Now, that stutter that Robert had, he could keep it under wraps well enough as he got older, but it always came out when he felt as if he was losing control, and it was just a constant presence when he was a kid. For the father's part, Chris Hansen was a local baker in the Iowa town of Pocahontas, a town so boring that they have a whole heading on their Wikipedia page about a big tornado that touched down outside of town a few years ago. There's no deaths or destruction or even injuries or anything like that. It's just really, really big.
So the biggest news of the day was there's a storm near here.
Yeah. No, it was not even the biggest news of the day. It was the biggest news of the decade. It happened like in 2011.
Well, that's pretty cool. I heard a tornado kind of touched down near there. That's pretty
fun. It could definitely pump up that this is the birthplace of Robert Hansen and just become one of those true crime meccas like Ed Gein's small town.
Honestly,
did.
Just lean in. Why not?
No, the only thing that the only famous person, they talk about two famous people on their Wikipedia page. It's an anti-war activist whose name I can't remember.
Okay.
And a middling baseball player named Larry Bittner.
Larry Bittner.
The Bittner.
Yep.
Had about a 0.27 batting average.
That's better than me. I'll tell you that.
Great. It's not great, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. But even though baking was the family business, little Robert wanted nothing to do with it, although he was still forced to work there most days, all while his father yelled at him for how worthless he was.
I don't think that's a problem.
Well, maybe if you stop being worthless.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if it gets down to a point, the yelling will stop if you get to be a better baker.
And this is bakery, so this is at 4:45 in the morning.
Right.
Every single time.
True. But it's good to teach a kid a skill like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bob did have a skill, though. He had a real passion in life, and that was his bow and arrow and his throwing knives.
Okay.
He would practice for hours behind his dad's bakery, obsessed with the skills needed to achieve a silent kill.
Like Bo Jackson.
Bo Jackson.
He makes his own arrows.
Uh-huh.
That's what after he retired, he's like, what else can I dominate? The world. Just nature. It's really amazing.
But he was a sports star first.
Yes, and he's a very good man, from what I understand.
Yeah. Robert Hansen wasn't even a baker first.
Right,
he just liked
true.
Knives. And then it's weird to say that it's your passion is throwing knives. Like, I understand, I like the slingshot guy, that German slingshot guy on YouTube. You know that guy?
No, I don't know that guy.
He's good at slingshot.
You don't know that guy.
No.
You got it. His name is like Grishlash, and he does like crazy slingshots.
All
and
right.
Now he makes money from doing it on YouTube. And that makes a lot of sense because you can monetize it using YouTube nowadays. Well, Robert Hansen didn't know that. So what was he getting out of it besides just
creeping everybody out.
Perhaps on this week's last stream on the left, every Tuesday at 8 p.m. on AdultSwim.com, I'll have one of those videos for you, Henry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Naturally, in school, Bob was less than popular, partially due to him being the weird knife kid in school who had the mean Danish dad, but mostly because kids can be extremely cruel when it comes to someone with a stutter, especially back then.
All right.
A stutter is a pretty debilitating speech impediment.
And it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's extremely hard to get over.
Mm-hmm. It's very difficult and it fucks with you mentally, but there's not just bad stutterers like Robert Hansen. You got to remember there's also famous stutterers like James Earl Jones.
Mm-hmm. Was he a stutterer?
He was.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was. Okay. Yes. And Bud Scheinberg.
Who's Bud Scheinberg?
Famous stutterer, according to this list I'm looking at.
Did you just Google famous stutterers?
Yes.
All right.
Then, when Bob approached teenage years, things only got worse.
They didn't get better,
they
huh?
They did not get
better. Not during the glorious teenage years that we all had.
Bob developed an awful case of severe acne, bad enough to deeply scar him for the rest of his life. It became one of his defining physical characteristic, at least the one you can see, wink, wink, which we'll talk about later.
Do people like him and Robert Crumb, is there like a disease that you get? Like, is it like a nerd disease that comes? Like, honestly, because some people just get the slam bam full deck of nerd problems like immediately, and I don't know why.
I don't know why either. No, I had a friend in college named Dirk that was the exact same way.
Why did it happen to Dirk? Dirk should have been fucking like the opposite of his name. If there was a purpose to the universe, he would have grown up like 6.5 feet tall, like a member of the lacrosse team.
Yeah, no, Dirk.
But that's the thing. Dirk turned it around. He's doing great now.
Having an
awesome time out in Washington, D.C.
Hey, perfect.
Yeah, he turned it around, but Robert Hansen did not.
No, he did not.
No.
No. And Hansen, he was just the butt of everyone's jokes all throughout high school. He just, I mean, because, you know, the guy had a horrible stutter and just a face full of pus-filled pimples. It covered it from forehead to chin. I mean, it's like, what I imagine, like, one of these towns, it's like, this is one of those towns where, like, the teachers join in.
Hey, Robert, hey, come here. Hey, Robert, come here. It's a funny little joke. Hey, listen, me and the buddies here know we've been making fun of you quite a bit for your acne and your stutter and your stoop way you walk around and how you can't speak to a woman and you never look at anybody in the eyes and you're always playing with knives. But let me ask you a question, okay? Guys, shut up, guys. What's your favorite TV show?
I love the show about the little ponies.
Oh, yeah! That's a new one! Thank you for giving us all a new one.
You made him a brony. No problems if you're a brony,
no
but my goodness.
But instead of just getting over his high school bullshit and growing up like all the rest of us did, because we all had high school bullshit.
Nightmare.
It's an absolute fucking nightmare. Some of us have it worse than others. Yes, but
everyone's, the bullies are miserable. The ones being bullied are miserable. But the ones being bullied are sometimes bullying people. It's a cesspool of horribleness.
Well, instead of getting over it, Bob just let that pain fester into a nerdy rage that would explode sooner rather than later.
Uh-oh.
Now, Hansen tried gaining respect where he could, like a lot of these guys do, by like joining the volunteer fire department or signing up for like the junior police instructor program. But none of it stuck. No one gave a shit.
Well, because he thought that that's how you got respect. And we see the same thing with David Berkowitz, who say the same thing with old fucking Bumblebutt.
Gacy.
Where they think that if you join into this series of a program where people wear uniforms, people have to respect me. And then you're doing it out of spite. You're doing it from your own bully mentality. You've been bullied into being a cop, you believe. And you think now I have control because authority is going to give me all the backup I need because I don't have the spine to stand up for myself.
This is a recipe for a horribly abusive police officer.
Yes, it is. So when Bob graduated high school, he didn't become a cop. He tried for the last avenue of institutionalized respect that he could think of, the Army.
Oh.
Now, honestly, remember, though, this is not everybody who joins the Army.
No,
we're talking
of
about
course
these
not.
We're talking about these fuckers.
Yeah.
We're talking about, like, these kinds of guys that replace the idea of self-respect and honor with what they can get out of these systems.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's really what it is. It's because the idea is that they want to use these systems for what they can exploit other people while using the systems.
Yeah, most people who get into the army are like really, they're doing it for an education.
Yeah.
Or they have a passion for it.
No, every listener we have that's either, a police officer or, in the army or any kind of armed forces, you all know this guy. Like, all of you are thinking about a very specific person right now as we talk about Robert Hansen.
It's the guy whose gun is the cleanest and his bed is like weirdly made diagonal. And he's allergic to certain foods inside of the at the mess hall, and he won't eat them, and everyone, but he's just like, I just wish they'd give me extra corn, but they said it's against the dietary needs for a soldier.
Yeah, that's really what turned me off to the military.
Yeah, what?
The beds. The making of a tight bed.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
Every day?
I've never understood how people do it. We go to the hotels, we stay there, you come back, the bed's like that, I don't get it.
Too tight, I don't
too
like
tight.
It. I always,
too tight.
I always bring it out every
All
time.
Right.
Our other sponsor for today's show is the new Fat Tire Belgian White, a refreshing Belgian white ale brought to you by New Belgium Brewing Company. New Belgium Brewing Company is a 100% employee-owned brewery specializing in Fat Tire Belgian-style ale, the American classic craft beer. Inspired by centuries of Belgian brewing heritage, Fat Tire Belgian White is a refreshing take on the traditional Belgian-style wheat beer, and unlike other Belgian White's, Fat Tire Belgian White is carefully crafted with the finest and freshest Seville orange peel for just the right amount of sweetness. I got two New Belgium Brewing Company beers open in front of me. Let's check out this New Belgium Flat Tire Belgian White. Oh, that's tasty. That's refreshing right there. I also got the Voodoo Ranger IPA. Oh, now that is a sweet, sweet beer, because there's nothing I love more than having a brew at the end of a long day of recording and editing. So, find Fat Tire Belgian White near you by using the Beer Finder link at www.newbelgium.com. That's www.newbelgium.com. Now, Robert Hansen's stint in the Army was pretty unremarkable, except for one incident. Happened right across the river here in New York City.
Really?
Now, Robert, being the good little soldier that he was, earned the distinction of being one of the USO's Soldiers of the Week.
Hey!
And was given a day pass to explore the city.
It sounds like they were just trying to get him out of there.
Yeah. So
Here you go. You won. Can we make something up? Can we make like Soldier of the Week? Go hit Manhattan, all right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you get lost, there's a lot of opportunities in Manhattan that you can take and take advantage of.
There, Robert and a couple of other good soldiers headed downtown and hired a professional to finally pluck Bob's flower.
It's a different time than now. Now he would just be at a Dos Caminos eating guacamole, maybe going over to a...
We gotta go to Dallas Barbecue.
To Dallas Barbecue. It's like you're in Dallas, but we're in Times Square, so it's like super annoying.
What is sad about this? What's sad about this result?
Oh, nothing!
This is a great result.
I hate to say it, but I was in Times Square. I like that trashy fast
food.
You
don't hate to say it.
I kind of like Times Square. Sometimes, if no one's there, but it's always kind
of
busy.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Times Square is always kind of busy.
Well, in the wintertime, it's a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah. That is true.
It's not relaxed. It's desolate. Yeah. It's a lonely
Well, now that
experience.
Guy Fieri's American Grill is gone, so what's the point?
When was your last trip to an Olive Garden?
Oh, Olive Garden's not for me. I don't particularly care for soup. I don't particularly care for salad, let alone unlimited amounts of things that I don't care for.
That's not the only thing they serve there. It's an Italian food restaurant. You can get pasta. You can get chicken parmesan. You can get the tour to Italy.
No.
Well, about Robert's experience with a lady of the night in New York City, his very first time, he said, quote...
I got to feel it, but that was about it. Everything was strictly slam, bam, thank you, ma'am. I didn't even get a hug, and I wasn't allowed to sleep in the bed.
God. Actually, now that I think about it, he's kind of like the dude that Katy Perry kissed on American Idol.
Yeah?
Who was like, that yes. I was saving it for someone special. I'm like, you're 20, and Katy Perry kissed you. You're fine.
Yeah, he just definitely felt, too, because you see it immediately right now. His rest of his life, he worked with sex workers, right. and his victims were sex workers.
He was taking them out because of this?
I don't think so because of this. It's a weirder pathology than that.
But I'm not saying that it is because of that, but as we learned with all serial killers, right, there's seeds that get planted.
Right.
There's the shit that happens early on that start little memories. And so his reaction immediately to his buddies doing a wartime, what is supposed to be like army men having a timeout, like boys being boys, going to see a sex worker, having a good time, he turned into a whole thing of like he was supposed to fall in love with this woman. Like this was supposed to be something crazy. So you could see, I imagine his buddies were like, yeah, exactly. It's slam bam. Thank you, man. That's what you
it's a pay sex work.
The whole thing is. Yeah. Right. We're trying not to have a girlfriend. That's the whole point, is that we're in the fucking army. We're trying to have a good time. And then that's like a weird thing. Immediate, his reaction.
Yeah, he's just complaining. It's just sex. It's literally, if I was like, so it's just soup and salad at the Olive Garden.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That is what the deal is, sir.
And that's another like kind of incel thing too, where, you know, people tell us like, if you have such a hard time, you know, just kind of maybe go to a professional and, you know, just kind of get it over with. And they're like, no, I want it to be special. I want it to be the woman I fall in love with. And it's like, man, you just
first
can't
time
have
is,
it every way. You just
the
can't
first
have
time
it.
Is literally Everyone's never weird. Special.
Yeah.
It is never once ever special. No, no one is the first time having sex is just, it's just, and you're just like, oh, I'm sorry. It ends with I'm sorry. And the rest of the times, hopefully it doesn't end with I'm sorry. Because if it does end with I'm sorry, you're on your way to becoming a serial killer every single time.
All right, let's move on.
So after basic training, Robert returned to Pocahontas, but the army had done nothing to temper the rage he'd felt for his school and everyone inside. And to make matters worse, the police chief took his junior police instructor rank away, partly because he was getting to be too fucking old for that sort of thing.
What do you mean? I'm 34 years old and I can't be a junior police inspector?
No. We all look at each other. We've all decided, no, get the fuck out of here.
He's like, what is he, 19, 18 years
19.
Old? He's
19. He's 19 years
so
old.
Definitely too old.
Yeah, but it was also partly because the police chief had seen Robert Hansen still at 19 sitting in the back of his dad's bakery still. Throwing knives at targets over and over and over again. And the police chief actually like came back and asked him, like, so what are you doing back here? And Robert would like throw a knife. He goes, you see how silent that was? And then he'd get his bow and arrow out and shoot. He goes, it's really silent, right? Like no one could ever hear you coming. Nobody could ever hear you. And that's when the police chief was like, you can't be a part of our whole operation.
He should have said auditioning for the Johnny Carson show.
Honestly, now with America's Got Talent, there's a lot of excuses for horrible, weird hobbies.
It was about this time that Robert's need for revenge started taking actual form. At 19 years old, Robert started hanging out with the high school kids who worked at his dad's bakery, and he formed his own little delinquent gang.
So he's finally cool to the high school kids.
Of course, he's that guy. He's like hanging out with these ragtag group of newsies that have formulated around this loser that he has control. This is what he wanted. Like, he likes to have his little group of people that'll look up to him because everybody else treats him like the mouth breathing loser that he is.
Right. Yeah.
Now, this gang's first project was to blow up a tractor in the nearby town of Rolfe, but that was just practice.
Okay.
Their ultimate small town Batman villain scheme was to blow up the town water tower, which would somehow show them all who's boss.
But, at some point, you know, Robert, we're going to need to drink water.
Yeah, but think about how stinky we'll all be for a week.
Yeah.
Really, and how wet it'll be when the splashes come down and the squirrels and the dogs get all wet.
So like we're kind of punishing ourselves in a certain way, but...
Well, it's kind of like if I punish myself It's like it is urban animal, so I'm punishing everybody.
Let's blow up the tractor. We'll talk about the water later.
But that was the ultimate stroke in their master plan. That was the end game. There was one institution that needed Robert's attention before all the others. The school. Robert said this about the school in his confession.
I just hated that place with a divine passion. I would do anything and everything I could think of to get back at that monster school that I convinced myself was out to do old Bob Hansen personal wrong.
Oh, man, now I'm just thinking of a school with, like, Frankenstein and Dracula. Maybe Braun Strowman. I'll throw him in there. That's a monster school.
That's a great television show.
No, that, that already happened. That was, that was a cartoon years
not monster
in the 90s.
It monster school.
Well, it was a monster high school. It's a high school that was populated completely by monsters.
Yeah, but I don't think it was called monster school.
You're right. No, technically, Marcus is right. High. But still keep in your brain because we could always revamp it.
Revamp.
No, the new one is called Monster High. I think the other one was called, like, Dracula Inc.
Very good.
All right.
But think about how lame that is, that at 19... you want to blow up the high school.
Yeah, you're out.
Like, you're out.
Get
you
out.
You went to the army. You saw the city. You did all of this shit. You still want to blow up your high school?
Right.
The name of the high school, Gravedale High.
So you weren't even close. Gravedale, cool.
Yeah, Gravedale, yeah. Rick Moranis was in it. It was great.
No kidding.
Yeah, I used to love it. So, Robert Hansen, in order to get back at his school and everyone in it, mind you, about 2 years after he graduated, he figured there was only one thing he could do. Burn down the bus barn.
No, that's where the bus babies are.
I see.
Because the buses go there when all the lights go out and it's nighttime. That's when the buses can finally make love without the prying eyes of man.
You're having like a Thomas the Tank XXX fantasy.
Can we look that up to see if that is real?
Oh, yes, we can.
There is no way.
I don't know, dude. There's a SpongeBob XXX.
Yeah, but SpongeBob is at least... his arms and
SpongeBob
legs.
SpongeBob at least has
tanks.
Got pants on that hides a cock. You know what I mean? Because if you give a cartoon pants, then you can theoretically give it a cock because the pants are covering something up.
I suppose that's true.
Huh. Boy, when you put in Thomas the Tank Engine to Pornhub, some real weird stuff comes up.
All right. Very good. Let's move on. So he's burning down. Let's get back to arson, shall we?
Well, one night, while most of the town was attending a big basketball game, Robert and his underlings took the opportunity to strike.
The idea of in Pocahontas, the best basketball team is the Generals from Harlem Globetrotters. You know what I mean? Like, that's the team that goes on to play the Harlem Globetrotters to get the shit beat out of them.
Who do you think wins in the Jonestown Boys or these the Pocahontas squad?
Oh, gee, I wonder what the Pocahontas high school mascot was.
Right. Something racist.
Yeah, I think we know.
So Robert and his gang took a can of gas, doused the barn, and lit it on fire. And Bob, who hadn't been kicked out of his volunteer fire department gig yet, received double pleasure from the act when he got to return to watch the whole thing burn to the ground.
All right.
Three of the school's 7 buses were rendered totally useless, infuriating the school superintendent, Waldo Mick, who also happened to be...
I can see him biting his hat.
Yep.
And Waldo Mick happened to be one of Robert Hansen's father's closest friends.
Okay.
Because that's what Robert Hansen liked to do. He just liked to poke his dad in the eye. He liked to poke the town in the eye, but in these little shitty, nerdy ways.
All right.
Well, think about what Carl Panzram did. Carl Panzram burnt down half a fucking school. Like, Carl Panzram, as he was a kid, was such an already deadly predator than Robert Hansen. To me, a part of what makes Robert Hansen unique leading up to his later crimes is how lame and unsuccessful a lot of his crimes were. Like, and I think that's what kept driving him towards a weird sort of serial killer perfection, is that he kept fucking up. And it would infuriate him.
Yeah.
He is a fuck up, that's for sure.
Yes. But it wasn't long before one of the kids who helped Robert set the barn aflame opened his mouth and made the bad decision to brag about the arson to a straight-laced GI back home in Pocahontas on leave. The GI reported it, the teen cracked, and Robert was arrested. Now, Robert denied it completely, which ripped the town asunder into pro-Bob and anti-Bob factions.
Bro, I'm on pro Bob. I'm pro Bob.
So what does that mean, really? I have to like Bob to be pro Bob, because I don't. I don't like Bob.
I don't know.
And Robert, I mean, he had people on his side, but it was mostly they were on his dad's side. Mm. Because Chris Hansen was like he was a well-liked member of the community, but just nobody liked his son. But because they liked Chris Hansen, they're like, all right, I guess if Chris's son didn't do it, then his son didn't do it.
Also a running thing in this story, mm-hmm. was the power that the community baker has over a bunch of people. If you have access, mm-hmm. to free carbs, people will do whatever it takes to get them. Yeah, people right. love bread and pastries.
It's really weird.
And as we've learned, Hansen's, specifically Chris Hansen's, they love baked goods. They put a plate of cookies in front of someone, and that individual is forced to confess. We've seen it on time and time and time and time
they
again to catch a predator.
Give cookies to these child boys. Always.
And a cookie was just like, I will tell you the truth, and I must. He's around cookies all day. I don't know what it is with that name and cookies and confessions.
Robert, you know, with half the town behind him, he even managed to somehow convince a girl to marry him while all this was going on. He convinced another local loner named Phoebe Paget, and Phoebe's parents did not want her to marry Robert Hansen.
Anti-Bob.
Anti-Bob faction.
Anti-Bob faction. Okay. It goes into everybody's got to be anti-Bob, and pro-Bob is just poor Bob.
Poor Bob.
Poor, stupid, stupid Bob. And he's sitting there just going like, Phoebe, I was thinking that maybe that we could go on a date, maybe. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah.
What we could do is, you want to see how silent I can kill? I always mess shit up.
I'll marry you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yikes. I gotta think about this for a second.
Love happens for all. So many of our serial killers have relationships.
Yeah, they really do. But also, it also is a running theme in a lot of the serial killers we cover that the wives, their parents tell them, don't do it.
Yeah.
Today's other sponsor for Last Podcast on the Left is, AdamandEve.com. Are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to AdamandEve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus, you'll get a free extra gift so sensual we can't mention it. And to top it all off, they'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, they're not kidding. So check out AdamandEve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item plus 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping when you enter the offer code LEFT at checkout. Just use offer code LEFT at AdamandEve.com. That's LEFT at AdamandEve.com.
Usually listen to your parents. Usually.
Your parents, your friends. They all say, don't do it. I can't remember a single serial killer who got married when the bride's parents didn't say, there's something wrong with this guy.
They always see him coming.
Yeah. Yep. They always do. But for Robert, after he got married, things started falling apart. Hansen failed a lie detector test and, in the process, somehow managed to admit that he had a plan to blow up the police chief's house.
Probably did one of those where he's like, well, at least I didn't blow up the police chief's house. And they're like, finally, now we can we all arrest him now? Is it cool to get him?
So that was the corniest line in the Frozen Ground.
Oh, yeah.
When Cusack, this is such a cliche line during a police interrogation, and the victim comes in and he says, oh, I should have killed you when I had the chance. And then everyone's like, whoa, wow. I guess he had the chance at some point.
All of the Frozen Ground was shot as if it was shot in 2013, and it was like a formulaic crime movie was never shot before, and they were constantly surprised by their own choices.
Oh.
Well, after Robert failed the lie detector test, he still said that he was innocent, but to avoid bad publicity in Pocahontas, and he was the one that put it that way, he pled guilty to put the matter to rest.
Oh, good.
I know how it is. I know how it is. In Pocahontas, you got the paps everywhere. You don't want to be, you don't want to be on the bad side of the Pocahontas mafia.
No. The Pocahontas press, I mean, they're tenacious.
So Hansen was sentenced to a short term in Anamosa State Reformatory, but he only lasted 6 months before he confessed to his new wife, who began divorce proceedings damn near the next day.
Good.
Because imagine how sad that is, right? You just got married. He gets picked up for setting fire to a bus barn.
Yeah.
Many months ago, he said, "I'm innocent. I'm innocent." Out of nowhere, he calls you into. He's at the state reformatory because he pled guilty to the police. You then are sitting there like, "Okay, but you've been telling me you've been done wrong." And then finally, he's like, "Yeah, I did it. And I got those buses." And then like, "Oh, this is done. I know my last name's Padgett, which is the weirdest, right, nerdiest name in the world, but I definitely can fuck higher than this."
Yeah, that's when the pendulum swings to the anti-Bob.
Immediately. She got infected with an anti-Bob cancer.
Yes.
But after Phoebe, it was time to tell his father. See, Chris Hansen had spent months since his son's sentence was handed down running petition drives to overturn the punishment, telling anyone who would listen that his son was innocent. Hansen had pretty much made this his whole life.
So you mean to tell me, Robert, after all this time, I combed my mustache, shaved it as tiny as society would allow me to shave my mustache. I made over 200 copies in the Xerox machines putting up the flyers, never mind the wear and tear I put on my hiking shoes walking about town. And now you are guilty. Oof. If only the Nazis were still around, I could send them to you, because that was the ultimate punishment back in the day.
You get the oof from a Danish person. That's not good.
Yeah.
I don't think his dad was that. So he wanted him to write with the right hand because that's what society wanted.
That's what
I mean. Right-handed desks, and then he worked in the bakery. He wanted his kid to just be a baker.
Yeah.
And then he tried to get him out.
It didn't really seem like his dad was that horrible.
I mean, he was just bad.
He was shitty. Like, he was definitely a shitty dad, but it wasn't anywhere near the level of a lot of other serial killers.
So, yeah, because his dad was trying the act of petitioning, as someone who did it when I successfully ran for Brooklyn Borough President.
You did successfully run. Yeah. You got on the ballot. That's a huge deal.
Thank you.
How much was that again? How much you get?
6,000 votes. 1.8% of Brooklyn. I own it. And that's wherever I am.
But yeah, he was just stern. I mean, Tiger Woods' father duct taped his hands to a baby golf club until he learned how to putt.
That's true.
So it's like a thing where he was a stern father that was trying to make something out of what he thought was his weak son.
Right. Look at LeVar Ball. He's got a kid who plays for the Lakers. Not doing well, though. LeVar Ball's actually a horrible person.
Well, when the truth came out, Chris Hansen was so humiliated by his son's lie that he sold his bakery, left town, and bought a resort to run in Minnesota at a place called Leech Lake.
Ugh. The best part of coming down to glorious Leech Lake is if you deny the giant sea slugs that had inhabited several of the cabanas, or the weird pink clouds that rained goo down on all of the trapped tourists here at Leech Lake. One thing we do have is dollar Bud Limes.
Oh!
And when Robert was released from prison, he joined his family in Leech Lake because there was nothing waiting for him back in Pocahontas.
Okay.
And fresh off that arson stint, Robert Hansen met the woman who would be his wife until the day he was caught, Darla Henriksen. Darla's two defining characteristics were these. She was a woman of strong Christian faith, of the submissive to the husband variety, and she had a deep, almost blind desire to help people in need. And in Robert, she definitely found someone to help.
Darla openly said that, too. I read an interview with her later on where she said what she met him is that He was a 25-year-old man, just got out of prison. He was cleaning Leech Lake. God knows what the fuck was in that lake.
Yeah.
He was out there doing stuff, and she immediately said, with his weird scarred face and his stutter and the way that he spoke and the way that he couldn't make eye contact with her, was all like, I could help him.
Mm-hmm.
That was like her first thought, being like, finally, I'll use my bosoms, because at the time she was tall. And they said that being tall as a woman like made you so undesirable, which drives me crazy because I think it's hot.
Yeah.
Which is, look at fucking Natalie. I like a woman that's much taller than me because I climb them.
Well, I mean, if she was like 5'8", she'd be 3 inches taller than you.
I'll take it. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'm fine with it. I'm laughing on myself.
So over one magical summer in Leech Lake.
Really? Is that the word you want to use?
The best part, Darla, is you can hear the slugs making love in the moonlight.
I actually never thought about that before, and I don't really want to know how that works.
Oh, that is nice, Robert. I'm so glad you took me out here.
Yeah.
So over that summer, the two fell in love. Darla went back to school in the fall, but the two kept in touch by letter before Robert had enough and said, quote,
doggone it, we can get married.
Well, that's actually a fine time to say doggone it, because it's followed by a nice sentence.
Yeah.
It's like, doggone it, I got guts all over my arrows.
But all of these comments are coming from when he's inside jail for murder. That's the difference, is that he's recounting this now.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah. This isn't something like from his wedding speech. Like, was after. This was in the middle of him talking about hunting down women and killing them.
So it actually was that. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
And the thing is about getting married, they finally had the means to, because by this time, Bob had finally given in and had taken up the family trade and was becoming a successful baker in his own right, working at every supermarket who would take him in the Midwest.
All right. Piggly Wiggly.
Piggly Wiggly. Yeah, he loves Safeways.
Safeways?
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah. You don't like Safeways?
We didn't really have a Safeway growing up. With Piggly Wiggly, we had a Cops grocery store.
We had Skaggs.
Skaggs is not a grocery store. That is a problem. That's an e-cig. That is not anywhere that you should ever buy meat.
Well, Robert finally settled in Minneapolis, where Darla was finishing college. And as soon as she finished, the young newlyweds set their sights north almost inexplicably and moved to Anchorage, Alaska, where they opened up Hanson's Bakery.
All right.
Now, we're going to explore Alaska, which is sounds incredible. Didn't actually really think of Alaska as being a sort of paradise for serial killers, but it is in a weird way,
sure,
where it's got all the kind of qualities a serial killer could ask for in terms of being remote, very little sunlight. But it also sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Alaska.
I mean, it sounds great now. And back in the 70s, it sounded pretty fun, too. Like,
all right.
Well, because Anchorage was like, it was kind of going through a weird time, because
opposed to now?
It's always been kind of a weird place, but then it was like a transition time.
Okay.
Like, back then, like, Anchorage was like, it was the most frontier of frontier towns. It was like the last true remaining outpost for like loners and weirdos that were just looking to get away from civilization.
All right.
But then the oil came, and with the oil came the boom, and with the boom came the workers, and with the workers came the sex workers, as they always do in a boom town of any kind.
Mm. Yeah, they say, and according to all the ID channel docs that I watch, it's all been like, and where the prostitutes went, smiles followed. And they go up there, it's like, because those hard pipe workers needed a place to rest their weary bottoms. And there's nothing like a nice soft woman's lap to rest a weary bottom, and these prostitutes knew it.
You think the people who do VO ever are like, are you sure you want me to say all that? I feel a little uncomfortable.
They're just obsessed with prostitutes. They're obsessed with saying the word prostitutes.
Yes, they love it.
They say it like 55 times in each documentary. And streetwalkers.
Yeah. See, I like streetwalkers. I like Ladies of the Night is one of my favorites.
Of course.
Now, when you read the book we used for research in this episode, which is terrible, it's an awful book, the book's called Butcher Baker, they make it sound like Anchorage in the 70s was pretty much oil fields, titty bars, a couple of churches, a police station, and Robert Hansen's bakery.
Hmm. If you're working in an oil field, what else do you need?
Maybe there was a roller rink.
We saw the pictures.
Yeah.
Marcus sent all of us picture albums from the time period.
Yeah.
It was cool that you sent that, Marcus, because it's nice to get a feel for the town, and it looks sort of like St. Paul now.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, it was a very stark landscape, but it had like a creepy kind of charm, you know?
It looked kind of fun, but for me,
like the creepy kind of charm, like I saw a picture of a station wagon that just had the words "Relentless Struggle" painted on the side in huge letters.
Maybe it was a demolition car.
Now, Anchorage in the 70s, it was a town with like a Wild West feel, but still with like modern technology. It was like kind of in an odd transition period between like the frontier times of yore when Anchorage was pretty much like an air hub. Like, it was just a place you went through on the way to someplace else. It was between that and like the 80s and 90s when it became like ski resorts and like oil executives and like the big golden towers that they have downtown now.
When the real sociopaths moved in.
Exactly.
Pretty much. Because the frontier town side of it just sounded like it was kind of crazy, but it was also the way they sort of described it was that every man was a pipe worker and every woman that you saw was a topless dancer. Or a sex worker. And I was like, whoa, that sounds kind of fun. They're like, it's just another description of a typical Anchorage woman. Like 5'3", busty, round in the bottom, brown, tawny hair. And I was like, whoa, that's the average Anchorage woman?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds, it kind of looks like, you know, a filthy town for filthy people. Like, and I mean that in the nicest way possible.
Okay.
It's like the Baltimore of the North Pole.
The Baltimore of the North Pole. Love our people in Baltimore.
Love, I know.
All
love
of
them.
Our friends
love
over
our
there.
People in Anchorage. And honestly, if there's anybody who gives us a reason to perform in Anchorage, sadly, this episode's kind of inspired me to go there.
I would love it.
Now, as we know, sex work is many times a transient business, and that went double for Anchorage in the 70s. See, Anchorage was not necessarily a place where a woman might set up permanent shop for a career in sex work. Mm-hmm. Most times, women in the trade, specifically the topless dancers, were working on a circuit on the Pacific Coast. San Diego, LA, San Francisco, Seattle, Vancouver, and finally all the way up to Anchorage. Mm. And then they head all the way back down south to start the whole thing all over again.
Okay.
Can I ask a question about like the titty circuits?
Yeah.
When you're on a titty circuit...
I think they're called that.
It's not called that. We're titty. I mean, I think it's nice. I think whatever they do is great because it makes people smile. But the part of what it is that do they go, is it like comedy where there's like bookers and they go and they basically follow the line of bookers, or is it a more unofficial than that?
I'm pretty sure it's the same owners for the establishments and then they kind of travel around because of that.
Yeah. I remember back in Texas, there was like a bit of a triangle. There was like a Amarillo, Abilene, and Lubbock, because there was a Jaguars in each one of those cities.
Oh.
So the women would just kind of go from one place to another and just kind of travel around and make money. And also that way, like, they wouldn't get creepy. Like, the regulars wouldn't get too attached.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Which I think is really important, because technically this is the group of... They have to rely on themselves, especially at this time, and depending on where you go. And it seems like they all talked about what you did see in this case specifically, with sex workers having to use their own interior protection system and saying, like, this place is creepy, there's a guy here that's creepy that comes around all the time. Robert Hansen, Robert Picton, Gary Ridgway, they were all on short lists for creepy dudes that were around. And they were well known for a long time of there's a couple of creepy guys. The problem is that if someone wasn't plugged into the circuit and knew exactly what was happening, then they would be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. And the circuit thing, like, that was if a woman was a professional. Some of the women coming into town to Anchorage, they'd only stay for like a couple of months, usually a summer, and make a quick anonymous buck before heading back down to the lower 48.
All right.
So since so many women were in and out of town constantly, disappearances weren't taken too seriously, and as we're going to see, pretty much any other crime committed against a sex worker in Anchorage wasn't taken seriously either. All of this made Anchorage the perfect place for Robert Hansen to develop into the worst serial killer the state has ever and hopefully will ever see. So pretty soon after Robert and his wife, Darla, arrived in Anchorage, Robert earned enough money to open up his own shop in a mini mall on the corner of 9th and Ingra on one of the main thoroughfares of Anchorage. Now, this was a great spot for business, but it also put Robert close to the Tenderloin District of Anchorage. Tenderloin being the name often given to American red light districts.
Oh, right.
Yeah, actually has its origins here in New York City. The theater district in Manhattan. That was
they
the
called that the Tenderloin?
Yeah, from the late 19th century to the early 20th century.
Oh,
that was the Tenderloin because there were so many bribes thrown around. A police chief said, "I used to be eating chopped beef, but now I'm going to be snacking on the Tenderloin."
It's a delicious kind of beef, but the in San Francisco, it's a terrible neighborhood. Poor that poor place is very undergoverned,
yeah,
which
San
is it's very intense.
Apart.
But it's I wonder if he did the same thing, right? Where did Robert Hansen actually go to this part of town? Do you think because he knew that he was giving himself one of the little allowances?
I don't think so. I think Robert Hansen...
Or subconsciously?
Maybe subconsciously, but I think he was a bit of a product of his environment.
Well, he's got the previous shit maybe in Iowa.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. We actually looked into it. I had a research assistant Annie look into the whole Iowa thing. There's nothing to that.
He was just thinking about it.
Yeah, the claim, because one of the investigators and all of these investigators in this case really like to ramp up how bad Bob Hansen actually was.
Uh-huh.
And they'd say, they just kind of offhand through like, you know, I think he was doing things back in Iowa, but there's nothing to support
that
he did anything up until about like 1971.
Okay.
And by like product of his environment, like I don't mean that Anchorage made him what he was. I think Anchorage gave him the opportunity to be what he wanted to be. I think if he would have stayed in Iowa, he probably never would have done any of this shit. Or at the very least, it wouldn't have gotten to the point that it did.
It's probably a very classic, what we see a lot is kind of like a 60-40, where there's like a 60%, it's in his makeup, it's in his DNA, he was going to do it anyway. And then the 40% is the random things that sort of lead the way, that show what to do. Because as soon as I imagine he shows up, his shop is right next to where all of the sex workers are, that whole red light district. He's watching them come and go, and the more and more he becomes obsessed with them coming out of the shop, watching them, watching all stuff. And he's like, oh, wow, nobody knows where these women come and go.
Yeah.
You start to realize these people disappear all the time and come in and out of town, and that maybe, just maybe, this is where I could start doing my weird shit.
Yeah. And the Tenderloin in Anchorage, it was no different from the rest. I mean, this place, it was home to as many strip clubs as an Alaskan could want. And most of these strip clubs had at least a couple of women who were willing to go further than just to dance. But for Robert, Anchorage was not about the women at first. At first, it was about the hunting. And this was where Hansen's nerd flag truly flew. See, today's nerds have it easy with the internet. You can just go on the internet and you can, you know, talk to people with whatever nerdy shit you want to talk to them about. But back in Robert's day, nerds had to make do with doing it all through mail. You had to go the extra mile for it. And that is how Robert started submitting his hunting kills to the Pope and Young Club.
Those two words together.
Pope and Young.
And the Pope and Young Club dealt exclusively in hunting records set by archers.
Whoa.
And that is not to be confused with the Boone and Crockett Club.
Of course not.
No, yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Good Lord.
And they only dealt with deer killed by gun.
Naturally.
And sons beat by paddle.
Perfect.
Today's sponsor for Last Podcast on the Left is Framebridge. Framebridge makes it super easy and affordable to custom frame your favorite things, from art prints and posters to the photos on your phone. Here's how it works. Just go to framebridge.com, upload your photo from your computer or directly from your Instagram feed for them to print. Or if you have a physical item, ticket stubs, art prints, posters, you name it, they'll provide secure prepaid packaging so you can mail it for free. Preview your item online in any frame style. Choose your favorite or get free recommendations from their talented designers. The expert team at Framebridge will custom frame your item in days, not weeks or months, and they'll deliver your finished piece directly to your door, ready to hang. The best part, instead of the hundreds you'd pay at a framing store, their prices start at $39 and all shipping is free. free. We've been using Framebridge at the Last Podcast Network to frame up all of the awesome fan art that we get from you, the listener, and we're very happy with it. It's extremely easy to use. Plus, our listeners will get 15% off their first order at Framebridge.com when you use the code LEFT. Framebridge has thousands of five-star reviews and even offers a happiness guarantee. If for any reason you aren't 100% satisfied with your order, they'll make it right. So get started framing your photos or art today. Go to Framebridge.com and use the promo code LEFT, and you'll save an additional 15% off your first order. Just go to Framebridge.com, promo code LEFT. That's Framebridge.com, promo code LEFT. So in 1971, Robert set the record for the biggest ram horns bagged by bow and arrow, followed by the second biggest caribou, the 12th ranked mountain goat, the 13th ranked doll sheep, and the 34th ranked black bear.
Doesn't count.
Why not? Doesn't count.
34th? No, you stop ranking after 10.
No, they do top 50, I think.
Honestly, 34th ranked black bear just sounds like a big dog.
It's really not that big of a deal.
I mean, we're not hunters, though. Yeah. I have no clue. I thought, isn't there like a rhyme that's like brown, lie down, black, go attack, white, say goodnight, where it's about bears?
I have no idea. Why do you know but bear rhymes?
I don't know, man.
Going to weird moose lodges to go to the bathroom or something.
The point is that Hansen knew how to hunt, and he loved doing it damn near more than anything else. However, I think it would be a mistake to think that it was his hunting that escalated into serial killing. Hansen,
well, it wasn't his baking.
I mean, I don't know. The baking got really boring.
I would say
the hunting's the more exciting part of it. He was just good at hunting.
Yeah, he was great at it, and he loved doing it. But his escalation into killing humans, I think, came from another place entirely, which is the same place it comes from with a lot of these assholes. It was all about control.
Well, what he openly said several times is that what he was good at was wounding the animal and tracking it until it died.
Yeah.
He would always talk about how happy he was. He's like, yeah, you get a nice shot in on him and then they get all weak and then I can get my hands on him. It's just like, it's very strange where it's like, I thought the thing to do was to like kill it like really quickly. Like that's what you'd want to do.
With a bow and arrow, it's totally different. Yeah, bow and arrow is totally different than like a rifle.
I don't get it, man. You know, when you're a baker, you got total control over the muffins, you got control over the donuts, you got control over everything. And I don't get how that's not enough control for you.
You can make cakes in the shape of titties. You can make muffins in the shape of vaginas, and then you can fuck them and wreck them and do all the weird shit.
Yeah, they don't even just have to be female body parts. They could also be leprechauns. If it's St. Patrick's Day, or they could be little, just fun gnomes.
Yeah, and you could still fuck them until they fall apart.
You can do anything with a pastry.
Well, I think with Robert Hansen, it just so happened that his nerdy gun hobby just happened to coincide perfectly with whatever evil it was that lived inside him. The hunting was almost incidental. Now, the beginning of Hansen's escalation began damn near 10 years before his first confirmed murder. Late one night in December of 1971, Hansen followed a customer from his bakery back to her house. He walked in and creepily asked for a date, and when she refused, Robert left. But the rejection festered. A week later, he returned with a gun and attempted a kidnapping, but was thankfully arrested in the process. I mean, this whole thing, like, this is like that, you know, the old saying is that, you know, men are afraid that women will embarrass them and women are afraid that men will kill them. Robert Hansen is that guy.
Right.
Yes. Well, because also a part of it, too, is this is a failure that shows, honestly, he was I'm trying not to be like fucking gross about it, but he was bad at this. There was like a thing that because he couldn't become the predator he wanted to become quickly. And I think that these failures, it's what ramped him up to the craziness of hunting them out in the woods and being really fucking ornate with being a fucking like villain. Like he wanted to blow this out of the water. And this is the kind of stuff that led to it because he couldn't get it together.
He's not Randy Orton, the apex predator.
Is that a wrestler?
Randy Orton. Yeah, Randy Orton. Oh, he is very attractive. Very attractive.
Well, I think, you know, what we're going to see is how many failures he does. Because, I mean, this first time, he was arrested almost immediately. And I think after he failed so many times, he started thinking, well, what am I good at? And
baking. Stick with baking.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
You come from a long line of bakers. It's all set up for you. Good God.
I think what he came upon was that, yeah, I'm good at hunting. I can hunt, you know, a deer. I can take down a bear, you know, with a bow and arrow. I can take down a woman. Mm. While he was out on bail from this arrest, you know, he went right back out and tried it at least one, if not two more times with deadly consequences. This first one is not confirmed to be Hansen, but the MO and the time period is just too close to be coincidence. On Christmas Day, just a few days after the incident with the customer, cops found the body of Celia Van Zanten in McHugh Creek State Park. She had her hands tied behind her back with speaker wire, and she'd been slashed across the chest with a knife, but the wound wasn't what had killed her. Celia had escaped whatever fate her assailant had in store, but the temperature that night had been 5 below. Celia had frozen to death while hiding from whomever it was that had kidnapped her that night.
Yeah. Well, we're going to see. I mean, it fits his MO later on, and that's why they're going to tie it back to her. But this is what it shows. She fought like a crazy person to get away from her assailant. This is a strong person.
I think she fought like a rational person, but... Mm-hmm.
But no, but you know what I mean? Like, she fought really, really hard. She had street smarts, and she was a survivor, which is what allowed her to survive. And this is a thing that Robert Hansen could not deal with, and a thing that we see with serial killers quite often, where they have to go for the easiest possible victim because they need to feel totally in control. And what he eventually started to realize is he had to control every aspect of the kidnapping, and in an obsessive way, because he wasn't physically strong or smart enough to outsmart these people who survive for a fucking living.
Mm-hmm. Now, Robert Hansen denied he was the kidnapper that night, but the next woman to be kidnapped that winter was most definitely him. When cops started to canvass working girls in the area looking for clues as to who could have kidnapped Celia, an informant named Robin Patterson told cops she'd recently had a near-deadly run-in with a short, pockmarked guy with a stutter. Robin said she'd been kidnapped by Robert Hansen at gunpoint and had been driven to a motel where he forced her to have sex. He then drove her to the wilderness, parked the car, and not so subtly told her he couldn't let her go. But Robin actually managed to talk her way out of it, telling Robert she hated cops and wouldn't in a million years talk to one. So Robert went through her purse, found her parents' address, and wrote it down. He told her he'd kill him and her if he ever found out she went to the cops, just like all the girls he killed before. Now, Robin took him at his word and didn't say a thing until her handler eventually convinced her to make a report.
I have a theory on the inside of this. I think what maybe happened is that she realized what was happening and flipped to start talking to him emotionally, because she said the last thing that she remembers hearing him say is that when he dropped her off is that he said, "I wish we had met under better circumstances."
Him kidnapping her and having her at gunpoint?
Yeah, that's what you guys think.
But he's disgusting. But what she probably did was like, you're cool. Like you could, she probably had to lean in and try to like manipulate him, because that's what he did. Cause then he kind of fell in love with her and did the thing, because she switched from whore to Madonna in his mind. And mm-hmm. then you're going to see that a lot in his MO, where he would pick and choose who he murdered depending on how they reacted to him.
But one thing Robin made sure everyone knew, saying it as often as she could, there was a further deformity that Robert Hansen was hiding from the world.
Uh-oh.
Apparently, Robert Hansen's dick was, quote, short but very large around, earning him the nickname Dimple Dick for years to come.
I wish that it was what I wanted it to be, which is hockey puck.
Well, not happening.
But think about that. Think about the psychological nature of that, which I think that people, if you have a micro penis, this is not, we're not trying to shame you.
He's got a round, he's got
it's a big like old... It's like a dog muzzle.
Ugh. All right, I don't want to talk about his weird dick anymore.
Now, when cops brought Hansen in, they did have one piece of evidence. He'd used an alias to sign in at the motel with Robin, but that still gave cops a handwriting sample. And when they asked him to empty his wallet for comparison, a little piece of paper with the name and address of Robin Patterson's father fluttered out onto the interrogation table. Huh. Now, you got to think on this one. They got this guy dead to rights. They got hard evidence that actually puts him at the scene. But one of the cops argued that they needed a search warrant for the wallet, saying that if they didn't get a search warrant for a suspect's wallet, then the paper might be deemed inadmissible.
They were just trying to, technically, they were trying to cover their, all their bases, but also it sounded like they didn't want to do a lot of work. And also, Robert Hansen ran a goddamn bakery where all the police got their fucking donuts.
Yep.
Where they were hanging out with him all the time. Which is the truth, where it's like, these cops knew this dude, they knew that he was fucking insufferable nerd, but they also thought that we'll give him a shot. We, who knows what it's, what's happening with these sex workers, I don't trust them. But also, the way he got them, the rid of the paper is ridiculous. The dude was turning around while he was, the piece of paper fell out of his wallet with the address on it. Dude turned around and fell out some paperwork. Robert Hansen leaned down and picked up the piece of paper. Guy turns back around. He's like, "What's that piece of paper you got?" He's like, "It's for my parole officer. It's important. I have the paper." And he's like, "All right." Takes a piece of paper, writes down what's on the paper, and is like, "You could have the paper back. We just need to know what it is." Fucking asshole.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he crumpled it up, put it in his pocket, and that was it. And with that, it was just Robin's word against Robert's word. And that's when Robert's friends came in. See, Hansen always had friends in relatively respectable places, like insurance agents who went hunting with him, or his wife's friends from church would come in and they all vouched for Robert. And they'd even give him like fake alibis sometimes.
Huh. Well, Jackie actually illuminated to something to me about Anchorage, because her ex-boyfriend had family in Anchorage. And there's a little bit of a, because there's so many outliers out there and it's such a place for, I mean, honestly, loners and people that are running from other places, they protect each other quite a bit. There's a lot of distrust of the police, especially back in the day, and they kind of believed in a little bit of vigilante justice, like we will police our own people.
All right.
Now, the other thing Hansen and millions of other criminals throughout history had going was that these cops saw the sex workers in their town as nothing more than nuisances and certainly nothing to protect. Robert Hansen was about to learn that lesson firsthand. He pled no contest to the previous assault charge on his customer, and in exchange, the DA dropped the kidnapping charge involving Robert Patterson. And Captain Ron Rice of the Anchorage Police Department, he put it perfectly when he said that they pretty much told him he could do whatever he wanted to with the prostitutes at Anchorage because the cops didn't give a shit about him either.
It was like, it's a fucked up thing. He just said, it's just straight up, he's like, "We accidentally gave him permission." And yeah. We didn't know that we did.
Gave it to it on purpose.
But. Yeah. This was even beyond guys like Picton and Ridgway. It wasn't just that the cops weren't investigating disappearances. It seemed as if they were actively looking for ways to let Hansen off the hook. In 1973, it happened again with a school teacher from the lower 48 who was moonlighting as a dancer in Anchorage. And that time, Hansen got away because the Anchorage DA wouldn't let the woman testify through a mediator because she was a school teacher. You know, she thought that if she testified, it was going to get back down to her bosses and she would lose her job forever.
I don't really understand. These kids are not going to see her titty pictures anyway. Like, why does it matter? This is not in the now where you can just look up on the internet or whatever.
Oh, I don't know. That's not true. No, things travel. People talk.
Things travel. People talk. Even now, a woman would lose her job.
Oh, it happens all the time. The New York Post makes sure to put them on the cover.
Yeah, exactly.
That's horrible.
No, it's awful. It's stupid. What did put Hansen away, though, at least temporarily, was something that I suppose the establishment of Anchorage valued a hell of a lot more than the women of their town. He got put away for a chainsaw. So in 1976, Hansen witnessed an overweight man having a heart attack outside of a Fred Meyer superstore. And this reminded him of his father, who was also a fat man with a heart condition. And that reminded him of that Christmas was just around the corner.
A baker, huh? A fat man with a heart condition, a.k.a. a baker.
So Hansen walked inside the store, picked up a chainsaw for his dad, placed an old receipt for something or other on top of the box, and tried to walk out the front door. But, of course, he was caught and arrested almost immediately. Now, this wasn't Robert's first foray into theft. By this time, Hansen had turned into a full-blown kleptomaniac, as a lot of these guys do. A lot of time, kleptomania is what happens on the way to the serial killing because it's about thumbing your nose at society.
And they brag about it.
Yeah.
This is a thing that Robert Hansen used to do while sitting there. He used to have a window area where he used to decorate his cakes and all of his shit. And guys would sit there and they'd jaw all day. And it's just him telling all these funny stories about how he liked to steal. And then half of them are cops and they're all laughing at it.
You know, and then in frosting on the window, he would write, "If I did it," which I think is fascinating.
This is what Hansen said in his confession about his kleptomania habit. And this is an exact quote.
"I have a thing about taking things because I just love to see if I could get by with it. My gosh, I damn near ejaculate my pants if I could walk into a store and take something and get out the dang door with it and not pay for it."
Honestly, man, I was a bouncer for multiple years. If you do ejaculate while stealing, you get it. You can actually keep it. I will pay for it for you because it's obvious this is really important to you.
So for the crime of stealing a chainsaw, Robert Hansen was sentenced to 5 years in prison. He'd be back on the street in 16 months, and at about a year after that, the murdering would begin.
Yikes. That was what they were super pissed about, the chainsaw. I mean, I guess in Alaska, you use it for multiple things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess. Mean, I guess it's like stealing a horse in the Wild West or something, sure. But they took that damn seriously.
Good Lord.
But it could also be that the judge looked at the resume. He could have looked at the last few times, like, okay, this guy has been arrested and questioned for this and got off. He's been arrested and questioned for this and got off. These are different incidents, different women. You know, this guy has just been getting away with shit, so we're going to give him the maximum sentence. Mm-hmm. That could have also happened. It might be that the judge actually did give a shit.
Maybe.
But I just didn't like his fucking face. How many times judges just look at you, just being like, "I hate your fucking face and the way you talk. I'm getting thrown the book at you."
Yep.
No, we don't know the real name of Robert Hansen's first victim. In the first in a series of weird, very Alaskan names given to the unidentified victims of Robert Hansen, this first victim came to be known as Eklutna Annie.
All right.
Please, honestly, though, there's a couple of these pronunciations that I'd love to know if it's real or fake, because I have no idea how to pronounce some of the, because are these...
I think it's, according to the frozen ground, that was how it was pronounced.
Eklutna?
Eklutna?
Is that Eskimo?
It's not Eskimo, Inuit.
Is Eskimo a bad word?
Eskimo is a slur, actually.
What? Is igloo not good?
Igloo's great.
But they have 97 words for snow?
Uh-huh.
Don't they have, like, 47 words for seal?
All right, this isn't time to educate you on everything about the Eskimo. No, Inuit.
Inuit.
People.
Inuit. Now, in the summer of 1979, Bob kidnapped and drove his first admitted victim out to Eklutna Lake, just a few miles northeast of Anchorage, probably the first time he ever took a victim out into the wilderness. Now, it's almost certain that Robert did not intend to kill that night, as it almost always is. Things got out of hand, the girl ended up dead, and Hansen found that he liked it. It could be that Robert got overconfident here. You know, after all, the woods were his element, so in this of all places, things should go smoothly. But not too far into the trip, Robert got his truck stuck in the mud.
Mm.
And at this point, it seems like Robert just got embarrassed. He told the girl that he'd lost interest in the whole thing, and as soon as he got unstuck, he was just going to take her home. But she didn't believe him, and she took off running into the darkness. So Hansen chased after her and grabbed her hair. She pulled a knife out of her purse and started swinging. Hansen wrestled it away, threw her to the ground, and stabbed her to death. He tried it with another woman a couple months after that in his camper, but this one managed to truly escape. But again, it was her word against his. And that was even though she had showed up at a stranger's house naked with her hands and feet sliced up from being bound by guitar strings. But still, the cops took his word over hers.
Good Lord.
These women keep showing up saying it's this fucking guy. They
this
point
guy.
To Robert Hansen. They say it again and again. It's this guy. It's really hard to fucking miss this guy. He's the pockmarked nerd that runs the fucking bakery with the stutter.
Oh, did you say he runs the bakery? it's the baker. I like him.
Oh, yeah, I love those bakers. They got a
snap
to him.
He's the donut guy. Oh.
But it's true where it's like they straight up thought that he was... They thought of him so pedantically. They thought that this fucking fat-bodied nerd... Same thing with the fucking bumble butt, as if they looked at this guy being like, he can't do anything. Like, he doesn't do anything. He's a fucking worm. So it actually flipped the other way, where with bumble butt, they liked him. Mm-hmm. But with Hansen, it was just like,
they tolerated
fucking
him.
Yes, he's the guy from Toxic Avenger. He's not somebody who's going to kill somebody.
Well, because the cops didn't do jack shit with that last woman, 6 months later, Roxanne Eastland became Hansen's second victim. And she was found only with Hansen's assistance after he'd been caught. But his third was found pretty soon after the murder in one of the most gruesome and bizarre ways I've ever heard. Joanna Messina had met Hansen at the docks in Anchorage, and the two had gone out for dinner nearby. Messina kept telling Hansen that she was looking for work, given a not-so-subtle hint as to why she agreed to go to dinner with some guy she just met on the docks in the first place.
And we're going to see this again and again. This is Robert Hansen's MO. He likes to set it up so it's supposed to be more than just sex worker and client.
Yeah, because finally, she just got tired of hinting and just came right out and said, I will have sex with you for money. Now, up until that point, Hansen was not planning on killing her. But once the proposition was made, she was no longer what Hansen called, quote unquote, a decent girl.
Piece of shit.
He said he never looked down on the girls who danced, but as soon as money came into the conversation, that woman changed from Madonna to whore. And that gave Robert the permission he needed to think of her as less than human. And once that proposition was made, Robert made the decision to kill, and Joanna Messina met her fate in a remote spot on the Kenai Peninsula for just that reason. But in a horrifying twist, it was not a human who found Messina's body first. And this is something that, I don't even know if this is out of a horror movie. This is something beyond
a horror
movie.
Yeah, this shit's fucking, this is like straight up just what makes Alaska scary, because they would also talk about how, like, you can go hiking and the weather changes so fast and so aggressively that you just disappear, and people are out there, like, and it's filled with dangerous animals. It's fucked.
I'm gonna do that.
Soon.
So when investigators arrived, they found that an endangered black bear had already made a meal of the crime scene and had left. But when the cops were trying to salvage what they could, the bear returned to finish what he'd started. The cops tried to scare the bear away the best they could, but the bear was only getting more aggressive the closer he got to the body he'd already partially eaten. So the cops made a snap decision between the bear and the crime scene, and the bear lost. Thing was, according to the establishment, Anchorage, they have plenty of hookers, but bears, those were in short supply. And so, at the end of the day, the goddamn bear got more concern than Joanna Messina. And that's where we'll pick back up next time for the conclusion of Robert Hansen.
All right, Robert Hansen, crazy story thus far. My God.
Yeah. I mean, Robert Hansen, these fucking, it's just, if men are raised badly, and he did it wrong.
He's a total asshole.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yes. Yes, Kissel. I mean,
a lot of people were raised a heck of a lot worse than Robert Hansen. And so it's not his father's fault. He just wanted to run a fucking bakery. All right, let's do some. What do we want to do? We want to thank everyone for Patreon.
Of course.
Thank you all so much for contributing to our Patreon. Without you, none of this is possible. I got a creepy pasta coming out, I think, on Monday or something like that.
Yeah.
It's going to be scary.
Yeah.
Oh. So make sure to listen with friends. So, yes, thank you all so much for contributing to that.
Yeah, and if y'all want to give to our Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. We could not tell you guys how much you've changed our lives and helped us to expand this little operation that we call the Last Podcast Network.
Yeah, and thanks so much for supporting all the shows here on the Last Podcast Network. Page 7, movie sign with the Mads, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. We got sponsorships. So, and thanks everyone who filled out that survey for Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. Hopefully we sell you products.
Many products.
Advertised products that you actually use as opposed to just ED medication. I don't know.
I mean, it's nice to have the backup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just in case, just to make it so it's hard, so it hurts. I don't remember if I've done that. Where you've taken one of those bodega, like,
ED pills. Oh, definitely not. Those will kill you.
Yeah, don't take horny goat weed.
Horny goat weed.
I don't take it anymore.
Heart attack in a pill.
Or that weird one that shows Ryu's ass while he's going to town on Chun-Li.
Who makes those? I honestly have no idea where those are cremated.
And honestly, people make money off of these.
Oh,
I
want
to thank the people that sent me a literal pile
of coffee and hot sauce sure that my asshole is a barren wasteland for anybody. Like, I can't, poor doctor that will have to give me a prostate exam soon. But I want to thank, first of all, Evan Orphanidis. You gave me some very sweet gifts from Alaska. The smoked salmon vodka that he gave me that I'm going to take at the end of next episode, so you all hear my reaction to it live. I technically have to drive after this, or else I would, but it's pink.
Yeah, you showed us a picture. Smoked salmon vodka. I don't know what to think about it.
I don't either.
Maybe in a Bloody Mary.
I'm excited. I actually think it'll taste pretty good. I want to say thank Michaela Denny. I want to thank the people from Ballyhoo Hot Sauces, Onyx Coffee Lab. Somebody sent me from Arkansas this fucking nice little coffee. I want to thank Spring Hill Jack. Oh, and away we go for that Spring Hill Jack coffee, which is really very nice. I'm excited to try it. The Chocolate Sparrow sent me some coffee, and I am going to drink all of it and never be the same.
Have you been soliciting coffee from people? Why'd you get all this coffee?
He did solicit coffee.
Did he really?
Yeah, he solicited coffee last week, and people sent a shitload of coffee.
People answered me, and it was really incredibly nice. And also, check out Eating Out with Nadia White, the competitive eating show. I went to go see her eat with a bunch of other competitive eaters at a place called Big Mamas and Papas, where they make the biggest deliverable pizza that exists. And I got to tell you what, it is fucking devastating to watch.
Yep, saw some pictures there. Interesting indeed.
It was.
Made me a little hungry for pizza.
A little bit.
I am sort of turned off from pizza just watching them do it.
Well, towards the end of an eating competition, it all becomes a mush, and you got to eat it with your hands. It kind of falls apart.
It got pretty brutal. Follow us on Twitter at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel. Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one. And follow Last Podcast and Left at All of the Horseshit at LP on the Left.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Elgin.
Hail me.
Let's do a Magustalations.
And anything else but coffee, if you want to say, because I'm loaded up.
Are you? You're fine. You're fine. You don't need. What do you need? Shoes? Send me shoes.
I need guns. Send guns.
You're not allowed to ship those anymore.
No, you can't.
Damn Democrats!
Unbelievable, right? You can't even ship guns.
And if you feel like me and Ben need anything, you can send that to Last Podcast on the Left, P.O. Box 1870, Long Island City, New York, 11101.
I need nothing. Magustalations.
See you, fuckers.